Lillian Daniel has been the senior minister of the First Congregational Church of Glen Ellyn, Illinois since 2004. I first heard of her back in 2009 when I read a book she co-authored titled This Odd and Wondrous Calling, The Public and Private Lives of Two Ministers. It's a funny and honest reflection on the life of being a minister in the early 21st century. It's a good book, but I don't know how many copies it sold. I definitely don't think it made the New York Times bestseller list. And it was actually her second book. She published an earlier book about preaching that I have not read. Then almost 2 years ago, she wrote a short blog post for the Huffington Post, a mere 374 words titled, Spiritual but Not Religious? Please stop boring me. And for whatever confluence of reasons, that blog post went viral. Did any of you see that when it, do you have any recollection? So this is a little bit of a sign of, I think my social media world is different than your social media world. A lot of higher percentage of religion nerds, I think, in my social media life, but it really was all over the internet. Many people were linking to it, sharing to it, commenting about it. And that viral blog post went viral to the extent that she was offered a book contract specifically based on that. And she published a book this past year titled, When Spiritual But Not Religious Isn't Enough, Seeing God in Surprising Places, Even the Church. Now, in full disclosure, you should know that the title mostly applies to the first 15 pages of the book, which is an expanded version of that original blog post. So, and it kind of goes down after there, as far as I'm concerned. So you may just want to read that essay if you're intrigued at all by it. But the reason I'm bringing any of this up is that Lillian Daniel was the keynote speaker at this year's Ministry Days, which is the two-day conference of Unitarian Universalist ministers that's held each year immediately prior to the UU General Assembly. And if I have my numbers correct, there are about, I think, more than 500 UU ministers registered for Ministry Days. Now, if you had the opportunity to put one speaker in front of a captive audience of more than 500 UU ministers, who would you choose? Now, keep in mind, there are budgetary restraints on who we can invite, but the UU Ministers Association does have that opportunity annually of that captive audience of UU ministers. And since they deemed Lillian Daniels' message significant enough for the UU ministers to consider for a few hours, I thought it was worth us considering as well, if only briefly. Now, while I don't know that Lillian Daniels has the answer for what Unitarian Universalism needs to fully bloom in the coming years and decades, I do think that she has some wisdom to share. So for our spoken meditation, I'd like to invite you to hear an excerpt of that blog post that went viral. Afterwards, there'll be about a minute of silence in which you're invited to continue reflecting on her words. And as you listen, be attentive to the parts that resonate with you, either positively or negatively. I think one of the reasons that the UU Ministers Association invited her is that I think some of it cuts, you know, a little too close to home and maybe hard to hear, and some of it may push us farther than we're willing to go, and that's good too, because it can help you define who you are by listening to someone. So, you know, and she also, I think she, maybe it's important to say, she comes out of the United Church of Christ tradition, which some people call, joke is Unitarians considering Christ, but it's definitely the left-hand side of Christianity. But so consider in this reading, what parts strike you as true, which parts would you want to push back against? And feel free, she uses the word God a lot, so for some of you that need to, you can mentally translate that as spirit of life or interdependent web of all existence, if that language is more meaningful to you. But with no further ado, here is an excerpt from her post titled, Spiritual but Not Religious? Please Stop Boring Me. On airplanes, I dread the conversation with the person who finds out that I'm a minister. I could stop there and give you a separate sermon on that. It's really amazing. But she writes, wants to use the flight time to explain to me that he is spiritual but not religious. Such a person will always share this as if it's some kind of daring insight unique to him, bold in its rebellion against the religious status quo. Next thing you know, he's telling me that he finds God in the sunsets. These people always find God in the sunsets. But being privately spiritual, but not religious, just doesn't interest me. There's nothing challenging about having deep thoughts all by yourself. What's interesting is doing this work in community, where other people might call you on your stuff, or heaven forbid, disagree with you. Where life in God gets rich and provocative is when you dig deeply into a tradition that you did not invent all for yourself. Thank you for sharing, spiritual but not religious sunset person. You are now comfortably in the norm of self-centered American culture, right smack in the bland majority of people who find ancient religions dull but themselves uniquely fascinating. Can I switch seats now and sit next to someone who has been shaped by a mighty cloud of witnesses? Can I spend my time talking to someone brave enough to encounter God in a real human community? Because when this flight gets choppy, that's who I want by my side, holding my hand, saying a prayer, and simply putting up with me, just like we try to do in my congregation. You can't make this stuff up. There are limits to self-made religion. You may recall that the subtitle to Lillian Daniels' online rebuke of those spiritual but not religious sunset people was, "Please Stop Boring Me." In her book, she elaborates that when I meet a math teacher, I don't feel the need to tell him that, you know, I always hated math. When I meet a chef, I don't need to tell her that, you know, I really can't cook. And when I meet a clown, I don't need to tell him that I think all clowns are scary. But everybody loves to tell a minister what's wrong with the church. But it's usually a congregation that bears no relation to the one that I am proud to serve. One reviewer of her book continued in this vein about ministers like Daniel who have become exasperated with yet one more person describing themselves as spiritual but not religious. One can imagine how a doctor would feel if he heard 98 people say, "I don't really go to doctors anymore, I just consult WebMD." Or how a politics or history professor would feel after 99 people tell her, "Universities are really outdated now that we have cable news and talk radio." Please stop boring me. But more important than these sarcastic criticisms, here's my takeaway from Daniel's provocative post. I think that her final sentence may actually be right. There are limits to self-made religion. Lillian Daniels' blog post is admittedly snarky in its criticism of the spiritual but not religious set, but underneath the snark is a strong call to prophetic spiritual community. There's an important reason, however, that the first principle of Unitarian Universalism is the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and that the first source of UUism is direct individual experience. The choice to prioritize individual worth and individual experience is our first principle and our first source. That's understandable, because our religious freedom was hard won by previous generations who courageously questioned the legitimacy of entrenched, powerful religious authorities, risking their freedom and sometimes their lives to do so. But what I hear Lillian Daniel trying to do is invite us to consider if we've moved too far in the opposite direction. While she does mock people who find God in the sunsets, she later confesses that, of course, she too finds deep meaning and beauty in nature, from sunsets to sunrises to walking in the woods. But her frustration is that so much more is possible beyond the bounds of isolated, individualistic religious experience. As important as first-hand religious experience is, and it can often be so much more important than second-hand religious experience, what someone tells you is true. It can be so much more important to really experience it in the crucible of your own experience, to know that it is true for yourself. So as important as that is, community is an even more often catalyst for personal growth. In Daniel's words, what's interesting is doing this work in community where other people might call you on your stuff. She continues, where life in God gets rich and provocative is when you dig deeply into a tradition that you did not invent all for yourself. And despite all the freedom that Unitarian Universalism offers, none of us invented Unitarianism, Universalism, or the combined Unitarian Universalism that started in 61. So as new as it is, none of us invented it. And this congregation includes active and prominent groups that include atheists, humanists, agnostics, UU Buddhists, UU Christians, UU pagans, and we're in the initial stages of potentially launching group for UU Jews. How much more vital and challenging is it to work out who you are, what you believe, and what your place is in this universe amidst such a wide-ranging hubbub of worldviews? And I'm always fascinated to see how much overlap there is between the groups and how many of you regularly attend two or more of those diverse groups, because you find them both, or two or three or four of them, all meaningful and helpful for you as you build your theology. But I suspect there are times, and various ones of us wish that there were just a little more atheism and humanism, or just a little less or more Christianity and paganism, or vice versa. But as Daniel says, again, what's interesting is doing this work in community, where people can and do call you on your stuff. Being part of a UU congregation that draws explicitly on six diverse sources helps keep us honest. It challenges our biases and helps prevent the sort of tribalistic myopia that can descend when you spend too much time around people that think precisely like you do. And Daniel clarifies in her book that at the root of her frustration with this spiritual but not religious set are those who think that their rejection of religion in favor of personal spirituality makes them radical. Whereas in the 21st century West, doubt and individualism doesn't make you radical. It just makes you a standard fare, middle-of-the-road Protestant, something that's been around since the 16th century. That being said, I do have an upcoming sermon planned for early 2014 titled Atheism for Lent, The Spiritual Practice of Doubt. And in that, I'll be reflecting on potential insights for today from Freud and Marx and Nietzsche. But those so-called masters of suspicion practice a more radical form of doubt than simply questioning religious authority figures. But you'll have to stick around till then to find out. And for this morning, I'd like to invite you to consider that being spiritual and religious is more radical and more needed than being spiritual but not religious. When I was in seminary and we'd sometimes sleep in and skip a Sunday morning service, we would sometimes joke that we had attended the Church of the Holy Comforter or the Church of the New York Times. Along these lines, Wendell Berry famously published a book titled A Timbered Choir. That book is a collection of poems that are inspired by long Sunday walks in the woods, where he had a timbered choir that he had taken instead of attending a religious service. And there have been times in my life when I needed to sleep in, go running, read the New York Times, or enjoy a leisurely brunch at the end of a long week instead of going to a religious service. That was what I needed to make meaning of the week that had come before and to prepare myself for the week was to come. But in our increasingly individualized world of computer screens and smartphones, with our iPad and our iPhones with those ironically lowercase I's, right? Because they should really be capitalized with the ensuing narcissism. That in that world, the most radical choice may not be individualized doubt, but choosing the hard work of being in community. To return briefly to Lillian Daniels' more sarcastic tone, she writes, Any idiot can find God alone in the sunset. But it takes a certain maturity to find God, and you can hear that in that namaste sense that you say in yoga, of the divine in me recognizes the divine in you. It takes a certain maturity to find God in the person sitting next to you, who not only voted for the wrong political party, but has a baby who's crying while you're trying to listen to the sermon. Community is where the rubber meets the road. People, they challenge us. They ask hard questions. They disagree with us. They need things from us. They sometimes require our forgiveness, and sometimes we require their forgiveness. It's where we get to practice all those things that we preach. What is radical today is the move from dependence on our birth community through that struggle of individuation and independence and to a mature, freely chosen interdependence that often only authentically comes on the far side of independence. That third step is the radical part today. Dependence, independence, interdependence. It's our seventh principle, the interdependent web of all existence. And significantly, it was the last one to get added. Robert Bella, the late sociologist of religion, when he spoke to the Unitarian Universalist Association, said, "We might be well served in the 21st century by flipping our first and seventh principles and living as a religious movement for a while with that seventh principle first." Because we've got that whole independence thing down pretty well as Unitarian Universalists. We're pretty good at that. The word religion comes from adding the Latin prefix re, meaning again, to the root ligare, meaning to bind or connect. So the etymological root of the word religion means to bind together again, perhaps on the other side of independence, or to reconnect. So if you're transitioning from the dependent stage of your life to an independent stage, then religion, especially the wrong kind of religion, can feel like a constricting attempt to bind you back into a role of dependence that you are doing your best to escape for your own sake. From that place of longing for freedom and independence, you may find yourself declaring authentically, "I'm spiritual, but not religious, at least not religious in this dependent sense." Because being religious, but not spiritual, blindly supporting institutionalized religion is arguably far worse than being spiritual, but not religious. But if you stay too long in that middle stage of spiritual but not religious, your self-made spirituality can devolve into an unhealthy narcissism of entitlement and self-involvement. Even more importantly, a prolonged fixation on independence can block you from being involved in the hard work of building diverse community. And it's not isolated independent individuals, but communities of people working together across diverse differences who most often transform this world for the better. And that's what we need. Along these lines, many people think of Buddhism as isolated individuals meditating alone on their cushions. But the focus of our UU Buddhist Fellowship, they met this morning in the chapel, they meet twice a month. Their focus this morning was precisely on the point that a mature Buddhism has at its core not only that individual meditation, which is, you know, key and critical, but has at its core the practice of Sangha as well, which is a Sanskrit word for community. That community of Buddhist practitioners who keep you accountable. Now, late last year, when I was working with our communications team to design a 45-second YouTube video ad for this congregation, the first part of that 45-second script for the ad was, "Have you ever heard someone say I'm spiritual but not religious? Well, here at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Frederick, we're an inclusive, open-minded community where you can be both spiritual and religious. We draw wisdom from all the world's religions and from the best of modern science. And we don't pretend to have all the answers, but we invite you to join us in living the questions." Now, I pitched that ad from that angle because surveys keep being released with increasing numbers of people identifying their religion as none, which is basically none of the above. So not none, N-U-N, but N-O-N-E-S, the nuns, or spiritual but not religious. But in our individualistic age, community really matters. And I believe that Unitarian Universalists offers a way of choosing a mature interdependence that comes on the other side of independence, of being both spiritual and religious. And I think it's significant that surveys also show that overall membership in the Unitarian Universalist Association has stayed stable in a time when many fairly open-minded American denominations have seen shocking drops in membership. The Presbyterian Church USA, which is the liberal one, the more progressive one is PCA. PCUSA was down 27.3% in their membership from 2004 to 2012. The United Church of Christ, down 25.8%. The Episcopal Church, down 19.6%. The Evangelical Lutheran Church, which is, again, the liberal one, they just elected their first female bishop, down 17.9%, presiding bishop. The American Baptist Church, USA, down 13.5%. So the better news, of course, would be if we in the UUA were seeing a steady rise, but I'll take a flat line over a 13 to 30% decline over a decade anytime. And my hope is that the numbers of Unitarian Universalists staying steady on the continental level is hopefully because we represent a place where you don't have to choose between religion and science, where you don't have to choose between being spiritual or religious. We're a place where you can also be a secular humanist, although I know there are also some self-identified religious humanists in this congregation as well. Either way, we're all in this together. Now, I'd be remiss this morning if I didn't mention a paradigm-shifting historic example of the power of being spiritual and religious. This Wednesday, August 28th, is the 50th anniversary, as Doug mentioned, of the 1963 March on Washington. And the civil rights movement in this country is a strong example of the power of beloved community, the transformative community that can be found at the intersection of prophetic spirituality and diverse community. And looking back at the history of our congregation, which formed in 1961, Dottie Ewing reminded me last week that a few members of this congregation attended the original March on Washington back in 63, along with some members of the local NAACP who periodically attended our service. Indeed, in the 70s, this congregation became a lifetime member of the NAACP, and we've been doing significant work in recent months in reconnecting with the Frederick chapter of the NAACP. This congregation has a long history of being a place where you can be spiritual and religious, where you're challenged to practice both loving kindness toward individuals and social justice. After all, as Cornel West has said, justice is what love looks like in public. Tenderness is what love looks like in private, but justice is what love looks like in public. And seeking interdependence on the other side of independence, being spiritual and religious, seeking both love and justice is rarely easy. As one commentator has written, we must be wary of falsely sentimentalizing the memory of Dr. King. When Martin Luther King Jr. took the podium on August 28, 1963, the Department of Justice was watching. Fearing that someone might hijack the microphone and make inflammatory remarks, the Kennedy Department of Justice came up with a plan to silence the speaker just in case of that kind of scenario. In such an eventuality, an official was seated next to the sound system, holding a recording of Mahalia Jackson singing, "He's Got the Whole World in His Hands," which they hoped would placate the crowd. Relatively few people know or recall that the Kennedy administration tried to get organizers to call off the March on Washington, that the FBI tried to dissuade people from coming, that racist senators tried to discredit their leaders. I know it's really hard to get your mind around racist senators in the early 21st century. That twice as many Americans had an unfavorable view on the March on Washington as a favorable one. Before his death, King was well on the way to becoming a pariah in this country. In 1966, twice as many Americans had an unfavorable opinion of him as a favorable one. So that's 4 years after the March on Washington. In 1967, Life magazine branded his anti-Vietnam War speech, which he gave at the Riverside Church in New York, as, quote, demagogic slander and a script for Radio Hanoi. To quote Cornel West again about his reticence about plans for the 50th anniversary celebration, which have started yesterday and are continuing, President Obama will speak on Wednesday. So Cornel West speaking about his reticence about those plans. We really don't like to admit the degree to which Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was as much anti-war and anti-empire as he was anti-racist. You'll hear a whole lot of talk around the 50th anniversary about the gutting of the Voting Rights Bill. And there is nothing wrong with talking about the gutting of the Voting Rights Bill. But that's not all of Martin. You're truncating Martin if you limit it to that. Indeed, in his 1967 book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community? His fourth and last book published before his assassination, King wrote about the interrelated triple evils of poverty, racism, and militarism. And if we're going to continue to turn Dr. King's dream into deeds, we need each other. A self-made, individualized religion of sunsets, sleeping in, and long walks is not enough to create the beloved community. It's really not even enough to get started. But together, we can do more than any of us are capable of doing alone. Let freedom ring. Each of us must move through the fires of independence. Let freedom ring. But freedom and independence is not the end of the story. As Dr. King said, the end is reconciliation. The end is redemption. And the end is the creation of the beloved community. May it be so. And I'm grateful to be on that journey with you.